nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
So we're going to start with part one of the molecular dynamics series. And we're going to talk about theory and the theory we need to run and a little bit about the theory that we need to understand the simulations. So that's where we are in the bigger scheme of things. And we just said a few minutes ago that the key in molecular dynamics is solving Newton's equations of motion that can be written in Hamilton's form as two first-order differential equations. And the force comes from a potential, and we also talked about those approximations. So that's where we start from. So let's talk a little bit about Hamilton's formulation of Newtonian dynamics, okay? So Newton came up with the equations of motion, and Hamilton wrote it in a different way, okay? And what Hamilton did, put very simply, is he defined a function called Hamiltonian, okay? Well, he didn't call it Hamiltonian. Someone else must have called it Hamiltonian, I think. Yeah, maybe he called it Hamiltonian. So he defined a function called Hamiltonian that is the potential energy in terms of positions of your objects. In our case, it's going to be atoms, but it could be anything. And the kinetic energy in terms of the momenta, so sum of p squared over 2m for every single atom. Okay. Now, I'm going to make a little bit of a change in notation here. And I used to denote the atoms. So it went from 1 to n. Now I is going to not just denote the atom, but the atom and the Cartesian coordinate. So in 3D, I goes from 1 to 3n. So it's going to be the x position of atom 1, the y position of atom 1, the z position of atom 1. The x position of atom 2, the y position of atom 2. Make sense? And that just simplifies the notation a little bit. So that's the Hamiltonian potential energy in terms of positions, kinetic energy in terms of momenta. Okay? Nothing too clever. Total energy written in that particular way. What's nice about it is that you can derive the equations of motion directly from this equation. Okay? I want to make sure whether I had. All right. So equations of motion can be derived directly from this function. And they're very simple. R sub I dot, which is velocity, right? It's the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the conjugate momentum. Okay? Very simple. If you look at the kinetic energy expression, if I take derivative with respect to P sub I, I'm going to get 2 P sub I divided by 2m, so P sub I divided by mass. So momentum divided by mass is velocity, r dot. So that's my first of the equations of motion, Hamilton's equations of motion. And then what I'm missing is an equation for the time derivative of p sub I, which is simply negative the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the conjugate position. Okay? The position corresponding to that momentum. And if you remember, force was the gradient of the potential energy, right? So that's what we have there, negative the gradient. All right? So that's, in a nutshell, Hamiltonian dynamics. It's one equation, and the equations of motion derived from that one function, and equations of motion derived from that thing. Make sense? So if I give you the Hamiltonian, you don't need to know what it's, what it represents. You can just solve the equations of motion. You can always write them and solve. Unfortunately, we cannot solve this. Same thing like in quantum mechanics, right? We can solve exactly the hydrogen atom. In this case, there's only very few cases that we can solve those equations of motion analytically for an interacting system. We can do the harmonic oscillator, right, the mass attached to a spring. We can do the central potential, so the moon orbiting the Earth. But if we have three bodies, we can't do it, okay, analytically in the back of the envelope. So with molecular dynamics, what you do is you solve this numerically. You use a big computer to solve this numerically, and then you can solve pretty large systems. If you have a supercomputer, you can do billions of atoms. And it becomes interesting because then you have a, you know, decent-sized piece of material, you know, submicron, but still there's a lot of phenomena that occurs at submicron scales. So the fact that you cannot solve the equations of motion analytically doesn't mean that you can't solve anything analytically. There's quite a bit that you can do. And so, and that's actually very important for the verification of molecular dynamics codes. So for example, let's calculate the time derivative of the Hamiltonian, okay? How the Hamiltonian changes with time. So based on your intuition, gut feeling, how should the Hamiltonian change with time? What do you think? See at the back. Just take a wild guess. What's your expectation? How will the Hamiltonian evolve as I, you know, my atoms move around? I have a billion atoms, very complicated stuff. Complicated potentials, many body potentials. Zero? Constant? But you have a billion atoms. What if I have three body potentials, charges on the atoms? What? Constant. 3 billion atoms. More complicated potentials. Yeah, exactly. So let's see. Okay, let's play around with it. So that's my derivative. Okay, time derivative of the Hamiltonian. I do chain rule or whatever that's called. So it depends on the positions and momenta. I do the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to position times derivative of position with respect to time. And so this, let's see, I always forget my animation. Yeah, I have an animation. So what I'm going to do is plug in the equations of motion right there, right? So I have a sum over all I, up to 3n or whatever. Derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to r sub I times r sub I dot. And r sub I dot was the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the conjugate momentum. So that plus the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to p sub I times p dot. And p dot was negative the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to r sub I. So, zero. No, the Hamiltonian doesn't change. Okay? Hamiltonian represents total energy. You know, it's an expression of the total energy. And my forces come from this potential. So there's no interaction with any external, sources of energy or anything. So there's no way you can create or lose energy, to nowhere. So it is conserved, as Tom led us to believe. So Hamiltonian is a constant of motion. So it's constant. Make sense? Energy is conserved. There are other things that are conserved as well, and I'm not going to show it, but linear momentum. The sum of all the momentum is constant. Angular momentum is constant. It's the cross product of position times momentum. Make sense? So these are things that are very useful when you verify a molecular dynamics code. And verify means make sure you're solving the equations correctly. Because even if you have a billion atoms, complicated interactions, you don't know what's going to happen, this thing needs to be conserved no matter what. And you always, unless the code has a bug or something. So whenever you run a molecular dynamics simulation with the code, you always verify that the things are conserved under these conditions, no matter how big it is, right? You always know that that's the case. Okay. So this is a very simple, in a very simplified way, the structure of an MD code, a minimalist MD code. You start off by assigning positions of your atoms at what you say time zero, you know, at my initial conditions, and you assign velocities to the atoms. And then what you do is numerically the following. You know your velocities, you know your positions. You know your positions, you can calculate your forces from the potential. If you know all of that, you can predict the positions and new velocities a little bit ahead of time, right, with your equations of motion, because you know the derivatives of the position and the velocity. Now you have new positions, you recalculate the forces, and you move the atoms again. Recalculate forces, move the atoms, positions and velocities. And you keep iterating this over and over and over and over until you run out of patience. And you say, well, that's enough. You get to the end of your simulation. Make sense? So that's how a molecular dynamics code works. It's this loop in time. It advances time. And every now and then, it writes output files or analysis or whatever you have so you can analyze what's going on. So let me finish with a very simple example, and that's going to lead us to next class. This is a very, very simple simulation of an aluminum crystal. And so atoms are moving, are vibrating a little bit. Hopefully you can see that in the screen. And I want you to look at it and tell me what's going on, what's happening with those atoms in time. What are they? What do they look like they're doing? Is that too bad for you? So what's happening? Well, you're a very sophisticated answer. Yeah, they're moving more, right? Temperature is increasing. Temperature is kinetic energy. We'll see that. So we're slowly heating up that system. Okay? So it's heating up more and more. And in a second, you're going to tell me what's going on. Something will happen. What do you think will happen? Melting. So let's see. It's melts. Volume expanded, right? Very rapidly. The liquid has a larger volume. And it's melted. So what would I like to learn about this simulation? Okay? So I could say, well, you know, this piece of aluminum melted when atom 3 was in position X, Y, and Z. Atom 4 was in position X, Y, and 3. Atom 11,000 was in position whatever other position. That's not very useful if you are Alcoa and you're trying to define a high melting temperature aluminum alloy, right? Who cares where the atoms are? That's certainly not. It's too much information. I don't want to know where the atoms are when it melts. It's completely irrelevant. What would I like to know, for example? I'm sorry?
The time when it melts.
But that's good, okay? But that's also probably, if you're Alcoa, you don't care about the time, right? Because it depends on how fast you're cooling. What would you like to know? Melting temperature, right? What the temperature is under that pressure or those type of average quantities. So what we're going to do next is talk about StatMex, statistical mechanics, a little bit. And we're going to try to relate atomistic phenomena that molecular dynamics gives us to macroscopic thermodynamic properties like temperature, pressures, average quantities like that, which is the way we want to analyze the simulation. So the underlying physics is Newton's, classical mechanics. What you need to know to understand the results is StatMech, because you want to have averages, and you want to have thermodynamic properties extracted from all the atoms, right? We're not NASA, so you don't care about where a particular atom is located, right? If you send a rocket, then you do care about that particular one. You can do the dynamics, but we don't. We want average quantities for the most part, okay? So that's what we're going to do next lecture, and I thank Joe, and we'll continue next lecture. All right.